Pies fume at excessive COVID ban for Steele. Mark McGowan, AFL.com.au. And our man is on the line right now here on RSN 927. A man who was all over it well before tonight. Our man, Mark McGowan, joins us. How are you, Mark?
Yeah, going well, Scott. Thanks for having me. It's definitely been a very interesting day. I should say days, really. This has been going on for several days, obviously, with the Steele side bottom Lyndon Dunn situation. And then in the background of that, there's obviously the even bigger drama around the rising COVID-19 numbers in Victoria and the imminent shift of all the Victorian clubs interstate. So there's a fair bit going on at the moment, and like I said, there's no dull days at the moment with this very unique season.
Well, I was going to say, as Eddie McGuire would say, what a day in football, what a week in football, what a year in football, as we know, mate. And we'll chat about the reshuffled round five in just a minute and those imminent hubs as well. But goodness me, as you say, Steele side bottom, four-game ban for the COVID breaches and a one-game ban for Lyndon Dunn. You've been all over this for a couple of days, mate. What can you tell us about it?
Well, I think most of the information now is, or pretty much all of it, is out in the public now. For those not aware, it all started on the Saturday afternoon. Obviously, the night before, Jeremy Howe suffered a serious knee injury. And that's sort of where the story kind of begins, because the reason Steele Sidebottom and Lyndon Dunn were at Jeremy Howe's place on the Saturday, I guess, was in a role of support for a guy who'd suffered a serious injury. He was in great form. They went over there, a few commiseratory drinks, and it probably went a bit beyond that. So what my understanding is, when Lyndon Dunn arrived at Jeremy Howe's house, at that point, his thoughts, his impression was that him and Steele Sidebottom would be being picked up, and there wouldn't be an issue there if they had a few drinks. Now, that plan changed as the night went on. They ended up jumping in an Uber later in the night. Straight away, they've broken an AFL protocol because you can't have rideshare transport under the current conditions. So they've gone and travelled to Lyndon Dunn's house. That's where Lyndon Dunn's night ends. He goes home, goes to bed. He's finished there. But for Steele, he continues on to Daniel Wells' house, the former Magpie, former Roo as well, who now works at Collingwood in a sort of a part-time role where he sort of works with their Indigenous programs and sort of dabbles a little bit in recruiting in their academy. Now, the second breach with Daniel Wells comes in because Daniel Wells isn't one of the approved Collingwood staff members who can be in contact with players under the current AFL rules. So there's sort of 28, 30 staff members who can be around the players at the moment. Again, it's around precaution, warding against the potential of getting infection. So there's only a limited number of football department staff. So from there, he's obviously continued drinking. He slept at Daniel Wells' house, and then the next morning, he's trying to find a way home. His phone battery has died, so he's struggling a bit to find a way to get home. And he's been picked up by police outside, or sort of nearby Daniel Wells' house in Williamstown, and driven home, which is an interesting turn of events. And that's, as you said, culminated in 4-week ban for Steele Sidebottom and the 1 week for Lyndon Dunn. So it's been a huge story this week, and obviously not what the AFL wanted as they negotiate with the non-Victorian governments to find a way to keep this season alive.
Sign of the times, obviously, mate. Do you think it's harsh or fair, the four games?
Yeah, I'm torn on it a little bit. I think it's at some point they had to be harsher. This is now the sixth and the seventh player to have breached the protocols. So when you start getting to that many over several weeks, at some point you have to make a stand. Like previously, Charlie Spargo from Melbourne, he copped a 2-week ban, the others only got one, and it just hasn't deterred the players. They keep doing it, and they might seem like really minor breaches, and your Collingwood fans out there might feel like Steele's been really harshly done by, but at what point do they just keep handing out 1-week bans? And who knows what's happening behind the scenes? Who's to say more AFL players aren't doing this and just haven't been caught? You just don't know. But I think with this, the fact that he broke multiple rules on the night, he was intoxicated, he was pretty disorientated by the sound of it by the Sunday morning when he was picked up by the police. He's potentially exposing himself to who knows how many people that might potentially have COVID-19. We don't know. And then he's potentially stepping back into that environment, in the bubble, they're calling it, in an AFL club. And again, it can have really dire circumstances and dire scenario for a club if a guy comes in and is exposed and goes around. You know, he's in such close contact with so many different people within a club. So I tend to think it's probably the right call, but at the same time, it's double as bad as any other player has received through these protocols. So I can see both sides, but ultimately, I think the four is probably about right.
Turn to Mark McGowan from AFL Media here on Sports Overnight on RSN 927, at by Mark McGowan on Twitter, M-A-R-C. Of course, you had the story, as I mentioned, the exclusive up on Wednesday morning on AFL.com.au, where the side bottom faced up to a four-match sanction, and that Dunn was likely to cop just one, which was exactly what came to fruition. Very interesting, as it was always going to be, on Footy Classified on Channel 9 tonight, Mark. And very interesting between Matty Lloyd and Eddie Maguire. Lloyd, he kept saying Eddie is too close to it and he can't be vice-captain anymore. And no matter whether you think it's too harsh or not, I guess, imagine what Eddie would be saying if it was another club. He'd be ripping shreds into them. So it's the conflict there. But I guess furthermore, mate, do you think he will lose the vice captaincy still side bottom, or should he?
Look, based on what Eddie has said tonight, he's pretty strong. He's emphatic in saying that he will not lose the vice captaincy. He will definitely remain in the leadership group. And a guy like Eddie, I mean, he's the president. He wields so much power at that footy club, and he's one of the biggest names in the entire industry. When he speaks and he's that emphatic, it's going to take someone pretty big to overrule him on something like that. I'd suggest he's going to keep it, and we're going to all move on by the time he gets back in a month's time. But look, I can see where Matty Lloyd's coming from as well. There is a massive conflict of interest, and it's something that's really interesting within our AFL media environment, that we do have current, whether it's a president in Eddie's case. We've seen guys like Chris Jarby still on radio. He was on Footy Classified in the past, commenting on other clubs and their issues. Yet when it comes to their own clubs, they can either be soft or just simply incredibly biased. And it can really contrast with their strong opinions on others. We only saw a few weeks earlier how strong Eddie Maguire was on, expecting transparency from Jack Stephen after his incident where he was stabbed, going back a few weeks now. He was demanding transparency. He was demanding journalists, went harder to find out the truth. Yet you look at the scenario, you fast forward to today, and, Eddie's talking about that he's proud of the way Steele has handled the situation. He's defended the fact that he had a drink that he doesn't typically drink. He's not drinking as much. So the poor decisions he made were when he was under the influence. But he hasn't at all publicly, gone against his behaviour in that way. I mean, in the end, he's still an adult. He's 29 years old. He's been in the system a long time. As you said, he's a vice captain. He's an official leader. He's gone down the path of, during a season, the night after a game, knowing the short turnarounds these days, and he's got heavily intoxicated and he's become disorientated and needed to get home, via a police car. It's just an extraordinary turn of events. It's not the most serious, a circumstance we've ever seen in the AFL. We don't need to want to beat it up too much. But at the same time, with what's going on in society at the moment and the tenuous stage this season is at and how things are changing so quickly, it was pretty poor from a guy who should know better.
It'll be Eddie versus Lloydy again on Friday night at the G, mate. Collingwood and Essendon will touch on, of course, all the matches for the reshuffled round five in just a moment, including Thursday night's blockbuster. At the moment, it's a glitzy Marvel Stadium game, Carlton St Kilda, on the Thursday night primetime. We'll get to that in just a tick. But Collingwood, Essendon, Collingwood, obviously slight drifters with the news, mate, about side bottom and the like. But $1.44, Essendon $2.80, and there's been some big money at tab.com.au for them. But it's still very intriguing, and obviously a game the Pies can certainly still win.
Oh, look, I'd still expect Collingwood to get the job done and get the job done fairly comfortably. I've been really impressed with what I've seen from them this year. Obviously, a little bit of a blip last week against Greater Western Sydney, but I mean, I think we all know the Giants, they're loaded with talent. And yes, they've been a bit down, but on their night, on their day, they're as good as anyone, the Giants. So, and they certainly weren't disgraced on the night, Collingwood. So for me, I'm still looking at their block of form that we've seen since the game's been restarted. and I've been really impressed. There's a lot of people who think they've been the form side of the entire competition. It is hard to doubt. But the really interesting thing in this game is the ruck battle. Obviously, Brodie Grundy is the number one big man in the game, the reigning All-Australian ruckman. And so on the Essendon side of things, you've got Tom Belchamber, who's been really struggling. He didn't train with the main group today. So, you know, they have to look at their options today. Do they bring in an Andrew Phillips? And suddenly he's in for his first game at his new club and he's coming up against Brodie Grundy. If he gets crushed in that, you know, that duel, it's just a huge leg up to a Collingwood midfield that's as good as any as well. So I think, just think they've got too many guys up and about. But I am really interested to see how they do handle not having a guy like Steel Sidebottom, on top of the fact they've lost Jeremy Howe to his serious knee injury. He's just been he's been fantastic down back. So they've got a few things they're going to have to change around, but I'd expect them still to be too good.
Carlton and St Kilda are on Thursday night, tomorrow night, Mark, at Marvel Stadium. And obviously that's a leg up for the Saints, given it was originally going to be at the G on the Saturday. Geary comes in for Zach Jones. So maybe a question mark on Gresh and Hill there, but in terms of the slight ankle issue I think Hill had, but I think he'll play. And Gresham, obviously, with the eye that really blew up last weekend. St Kilda drifting a little bit with Zach Jones out, I'm assuming, there at $1.75. Tab.com.au. Carlton, $2.10. This should be a ripper, but do you understand, obviously, why the Saints are slight favourites at Marvel?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one. On the Blues side of things, they regain Zach Fisher. They get Harry Mackay, who's one of the best contested marking forwards in the competition. So two really good ins, and the Blues are going pretty well. I mean, what they've put up in the last couple of weeks has been really impressive. And the week before that, they only just went down to Melbourne after a really slow start. So for me, this is a 50-50 game. I don't see one side being a genuine favourite, to be honest. I mean, the Saints have been a little bit up and down. They were exposed a bit, I thought, a few weeks ago against Collingwood. Just didn't have an answer that day. They were just simply outclassed. But we've seen some good footy from the Saints, and they're a really attacking team under Brett Ratten. And there's been a lot made this week of the fact that they're putting the ball in a really good position when they go inside 50, and suddenly they're kicking incredibly accurately. And we saw that last week. And, you know, if you're kicking goal, making the most of your opportunities, you're going to be in every game. And that's, obviously, they have to improve on what they displayed against Collingwood 2 weeks ago, but what we saw at the weekend, there's a lot to like about the Saints. And we all love attacking football, especially at the moment with the low-scoring game. So I'm really intrigued to see who does emerge out of this, because whoever wins out of this game, you'd have to think they're suddenly right there in the finals mix. You know, they've built a really good block of form over the last few weeks, if they can win again this week. And in the shortened season, we're looking at sort of 9-10 wins gets you to the finals. So they'll be really keen to win these 50-50 ones.
To Mark McGowan, AFL Media here on Sports Overnight on RSN 927, at by Mark McGowan on Twitter, MARC. Of course, the big news tonight, Pies Hume, an excessive COVID ban for Steel, and Mark McGowan all over it, with Steel Sidebottom getting the four matches and Lyndon Dunn getting the one. West Coast Sydney is a new clash we weren't expecting a few days ago. They're at Metricon, the Eagles $1.57, Sydney $2.45, must win for both sides.
It absolutely is. And as you said, it has switched. It's been a bit different. It was originally going to be West Coast playing against Richmond up in Queensland. I mean, just let that sink in a bit. I mean, it just sounds bizarre, but that's the season we're at. But the Queensland government didn't want Richmond, more in general, any Victorian teams to come up to the Sunshine State. So it had to be a quick rejig, and the Swans head up there. And obviously we're seeing Melbourne and Richmond now play on the Sunday. So a few changes. Look, the West Coast Sydney rivalry, it goes back so many years. It's not what it was in sort of those, you know, 2004, 2005 years, but they've just got a great history, these two clubs. They arch rivals, and they generally play really close games of footy. So as you said, I think mostly for West Coast, it's a must win. Not much was expected of the Swans this year. And if anything, they've probably exceeded expectations at this stage, especially with Buddy on the sidelines. They've lost Sam Naismith last week. They've missed him for some of the games this year as well. On top of that, they've just got a really nice group of young talent. And John Longmire has a really good knack of getting the best out of his group. They had a down year last year, but the future looks bright. And look, they're going quite well, I think, for where they're at in their rebuild. And on the flip side, West Coast is expected to be a premiership contender this year, and they've really struggled up there in Queensland. There's been a bit made of the fact that they've complained quite a lot about their situation, when they're going to get home. Adam Simpson's been quite vocal about that. We now know they're going to eventually get back to WA and play seven straight matches there, if that's how it all works out, as has been reported previously. If that's the case, they still want to win these games. Just get things going. They'd be expected to beat the Swans. They get that. They eventually move on to Perth and hopefully can get a roll on. And as I said before, 9 or 10 wins will get you there. But they'd like to be finishing a little bit higher in the 8, I would have thought. So they have to get going pretty quickly. But they should get boosted by Jeremy McGovern this week, and that's a huge boost.
From the West Coast Eagles to the Gold Coast Suns, mate, and obviously down here in Victoria this week on the Saturday at the Cattery. The Gold Coast, $3.50, pretty juicy, I reckon, at tab.com.au. Geelong, $1.30, though, at home, and obviously a big milestone day for them.
It absolutely is. Gary Ablett plays game 350, Joel Selwood plays game 300, but in the lead-in, there's been suggestions that the man of the moment, Matt Rao, might overshadow both of them. He's been sensational. First year of footy, the number one pick last year, has come in. He's arguably been best on ground 3 straight weeks, which is just incredible. How the guys have stepped in and he's doing, you know, what he's done. I mean, it's just been incredible to watch this kid play. He's got a strong body. He's quick. He's kicking, you know, left foot goals from 50 metres. He's just holding up against all these hardened competitors. And it's been really exciting to see him perform so well. And then on the other side of things, the Suns in general, they've been a real surprise packet this year. I think we've been hoping at some stage they were going to lift, and we're starting to see that. They're 3-1. And yes, we've seen them start well the last 2 years, but looking at the numbers, it just looks more sustainable now. They look like they're playing a brand of footy that will stack up over a full season. It's not going to be perfect. They're going to have their lulls because they are still the youngest team in the competition, but I think the Suns are definitely for real, and hopefully they can get to, you know, 6, 7, 8 wins this year. And if they do that, not only are they going to be in the finals race for a long time, but I think everyone's going to start believing that they're moving in the right direction finally. So I think the Cats are going to be too good, especially down there. But look, can't put anything past the Suns all this strange season. So let's hope it's another hard-fought, close game, but hopefully a bit more entertaining than the Cats game last week against the Demons.
Hard to believe how comfortably the Suns lost to the Power in round one. And that form line, though, certainly stands up. Port Adelaide absolutely flying. $1.92 each of two at tab.com.au against Brisbane in the top of the table clash at the Gabba on Saturday night. Can't wait for this one, Mark. And I actually think the Power will get up too.
It's a great contest. And we talked a bit earlier about the Saints and Blues and that being a good gauge of where both those sides are at. And you fast forward to this one, the Port Adelaide and Brisbane, they're, you know, as you said, they're right up there at the top of the ladder at the pointy end, and we're going to find out how good they both are. You know, when you play the best, that's when you find out just whether you are going to stack up, because that's what the teams are going to have to beat when they get to, I was going to say September, but it's more October now that we're getting to this again, this strange season that we keep talking about. But the lines have come good. They had that poor start against Hawthorn so many months ago, but since the resumption, I think they've been really impressive. And there were some fears after round one that they'd have a bit of a hangover after their breakthrough season last year, but Chris Fagan's got them back on track. Lachie Neal, we talk about Matt Rao going well. Well, Lachie Neal's arguably going even better. And he's probably leading the Brownlow at the moment. He hasn't had a bad game so far. He might have votes in every single one so far. So when you've got a guy like that, and a guy like Hugh McCluggage, a young gun on the rise, he's no longer just a young gun, to be honest. He's a guy who's all-Australian calibre. And they just have so many good players across the lines, and Harris Andrews down back. But then on the flip side, Port Adelaide, they're coming good, and Charlie Dixon up front in arguably career-best form. And they've got a really good mix of experience and the young guys coming through, the Connor Rosies, the Zach Butters, these sort of guys who are just playing great footy. And Ken Hinckley, he's risen to the challenge. The gauntlet was thrown down to him, but he had to play finals this year. The Power had to play finals this year if he wanted to keep his job. Well, he's almost halfway there to securing that berth. And you'd imagine they're going to be right there as the season goes on.
Bulldogs North Melbourne also on the Saturday night, Mark. The Bulldogs $1.72, North Melbourne $2.15 at tab.com.au. They're at Marvel Stadium. I very much enjoyed your grilling of Reece Shaw post their loss to the Hawks on Sunday, mate, particularly about, of course, Zeeble and Cunnington. And do you see either of those two playing? And can they get up against the Doggies?
You'd like to think Cunnington plays this week. He's missed the last two with that back issue. He's struggling with a bit of a nerve impingement in his back, which sounds like he's really struggling with. I was shocked when he was a late withdrawal again. I assumed it was just one of those things where you'd sit out a week and then you'd be, you know, not fresh as a daisy, but you'd be, you know, ready to play a week later. The fact that it's tipped into 2 weeks where he's been a late withdrawal, a little bit of concern that he, you know, it's an ongoing issue once it slips into 2 weeks and it's something you haven't quite solved. At least you talked about he can barely bend over, which is not going to help him when you're a guy like Ben Cunnington who thrives on the contested footy and you're getting, you know, down and dirty in the contest. So they're really going to hope he plays. Jack Zeeble, I'd be stunned if he plays, to be honest. But what I'm hearing is that he wants to play and he's pushing to play, but the physios were preferring to sit out at least a week. So what that tells us is that it is at least on the minor side with that hammy. But yeah, Jack Zeeble, just, he's the sort of guy who just plays through everything. So you wouldn't be shocked if he gets his way either. But another really good test for the Roos, they've come down to earth a little bit in the past fortnight after a really good start to the season. So, and then you look at it the other side where the Dogs are starting to come good at the same time. So the Dogs are looking to obviously keep that momentum going after a really slow start, whereas the Roos have to get back on track here because, as we know, momentum's it's such a dangerous thing. When you've got it and you're up and about, yep, great, you can beat anyone. But when you start losing momentum, especially at this stage of the season, it can derail a team. So there's a lot to play for in this one. The Dogs will certainly be expecting to come out with the 4 points, especially if they want to continue that rise up the ladder. And as you said and saw in the preseason, people were tipping them as an outside chance for the flag, and they certainly didn't play like it at the start. But they're starting to come good, and as we know, they've got one of the best players in the competition as their captain in Marcus Montempelli.
General Mark McGowan, AFL Media here on Sports Overnight on RSN 927. We'll whip to the Sunday games as well, mate. And Adelaide Fremantle at Metricon on the Sunday is the first of the three games. And what a crunch clash this is. Fremantle $1.60, Adelaide $2.40, tab.com.au. Of course, no Fife for the Dockers.
Yeah, that sort of evens it out a little bit. I know they're both looking for their first win, but I think what we've seen from the Dockers has been a lot more impressive than what we've seen on the Crows side of things. And you take out Fife, yes, that hurts. You'd expect a guy like Michael Walters to probably step up a bit more. You'd expect him to play a lot more time in the midfield than he usually does. And as we've seen, he's a match winner. But this is an opportunity for Adelaide as well to finally stand up. They've had such a shocking run. But watching last week's game, I liked what they produced in that third quarter in particular. They were down and out at halftime. Looking really poor after having back-to-back heavy defeats leading into that. So it was effectively 10 straight quarters of really poor footy. But they came out in the third quarter. They threw Chase Jones, their top 10 pick from a couple of years ago, threw him into the midfield, and he did some really nice things. And Taylor Walker finally got going. They played some attacking footy, and I liked what I saw. And I think that's what the Crows fans want to see this year from them. They're not going to get a lot of wins, but they want to see the young kids put into leading featured roles. And I want to see them improve. I think that's what we want to see from the Crows. But if they're going to win games this year, these are the ones that they have to aim for. Because the Dockers aren't going great. I think they're better than what we've seen. But when they haven't won a game in four rounds, again, the Crows have to think they're at least half a chance. So it'd be really interesting to see which team finally breaks the duck.
Certainly a chance there on Sunday, the Crows, you would think. Mark, I thought they'd sent the power out for them in the third quarter on Sunday. They were that good, so they definitely lifted for that quarter. You're exactly right, mate. But Melbourne-Richmond at the G on Sunday, both sides not exactly flying. Richmond $1.52 and Melbourne $2.55, tab.com.au. I lean towards the Tigers. I just really worry about what I've seen a little bit lately about Melbourne's scoring prowess.
Yeah, the Demons are in an interesting spot. They definitely look like they've improved on what we saw from them last year, which certainly isn't hard. Second last year, a huge fall from grace. They've definitely improved. They're more competitive throughout the game. And we're still seeing similar sorts of issues, but they just haven't, as you said, they haven't sorted out their attacking side of things. They're going with a really small forward line at the moment. And the one tall or genuine tool they have up there, Tom McDonald, just hasn't recaptured that form from 2018. And yes, we know key forwards are generally struggling against, I guess, the shortened quarters, and there's all sorts of factors that why that's happening with the flooding and teams aren't dropping off as, you know, late in quarters, et cetera, but you can't shy away from the fact Tom McDonald isn't in that form that he produced in 2018 when he kicked 50-plus goals. That's what they need. They need him up and firing. And, you know, there's guys that can't get a game at the moment, like a Sam Wiedemann, who is another genuine tall, you know, mid-190s in height, a top-10 pick from a couple of years. They'd love him just to demand a spot, but he's just not playing good enough footy at the moment. So they're leaning on the Bailey Fritches, the Mitch Hannans, these sorts of guys to kick their goals. And, they've got a really nice small forward they drafted last year in Cozzy Pickett. I'm super impressed with what he's been doing, but they just have to find a way to get a better connection between the mids and the forwards, and they've got to start getting some scoreboard pressure on. And that's going to be critical against the Tigers lineup. That, yes, they're out of sorts, but look, I think we all know they've got 6-7 players at the top who are genuine A-graders, and at some point they're going to wake from their slumber and just get going again. And we saw last year, once they hit that peak form, they just rolled through. You know, got to mid-season last year and they didn't lose another game. So I'm certainly not ready to write off the Tigers. And I think we might see them ready to roar this week. But, yeah, the Demons hopefully can catch them at a decent time from their perspective. But the Tigers will be just as keen to get a win.
And GWS Hawthorn rounds it all out, Mark, on the Sunday. The Giants $1.62 and Hawthorn $2.35. Tab.com.au. Very intriguing game, this one. And also, mate, what did you make of Clarko's state of the game comments? You were there at the coalface.
Well, just to start with, I think those odds are outrageous, to be honest.
Yeah, Hawks are ripping odds, aren't they?
You look at the two games between these two clubs last year, and Hawthorn flogged them on both occasions, and it wasn't an accident. I've seen nothing since to suggest that Leon Cameron has found a way to solve the problems that affected them in both of those games. Clarko out-coached him on both of those occasions, absolutely strangled their ball movement, took away their uncontested marks. And yeah, they're a skillful side, but the Hawthorn defence is so good, and it's some of the best in the competition, and that seems to be the kryptonite for the Giants. And again, as I said, I'm yet to see, because I've seen similar types of matches since then, and even this season, and the Giants haven't had a solution. If they don't find one this week, I can't see them going close to Hawthorn, to be honest. They were hammered on both occasions, in Sydney and at the MCG. So for me, Hawthorn going as favourites. And until I see the Giants solve the Hawthorn riddle, I can't tip them. So for me, the Hawks win this one, but they've got to solve it at some point. And this is a real acid test for Liam Cameron. He's out of contract as a coach. He's got them close over the years, but he's got to solve these sorts of problems and prove to the decision makers, the power brokers at GWS, that he is the man to lead them to their inaugural flag. And they've got a side that's capable of doing it. So fair bit of pressure on Leon, even though the results have been good. When you've got a side like this, you've got to get the results. So he'd be very, very keen to get one up on his former mentor, obviously a guy who worked under Clarko many years ago. And just getting to your other question around Clarko, yeah, it was an interesting press conference to be in. Clarko clearly had decided before he came in what he was going to talk about. I tried a few times to steer him onto the game and to steer him into some positive areas, and he was not having a bar of it. He was not happy about the state of the game, the quality of that particular one, and the game in general. And he certainly didn't want to talk about any positives out of that game. But one positive that was huge was Chad Wingard. And I think they'd be quietly pretty chuffed with how he's progressing in his second season.
Absolutely, Mark. Last but not least, really appreciate your time being so generous with it. Mark McGowan, AFL.com.au, Pies Fume, excessive COVID ban for Steel. Steel side bottom with the 4-game suspension for the COVID-19 protocol breach, and breaches, and Lyndon Dunn getting the one match, the exclusive there on Wednesday morning at AFL.com.au by Mark McGowan, of course. At by Mark McGowan on Twitter. M-A-R-C. It's a popular name in the world at the moment, mate. The world of footy, the world of everything. And just on that, mate, how are you envisaging the rest of this crazy season unfolding with the hub situations?
Oh, well, I think at this stage it's quite clear that we're not going to see much footy after this weekend in Victoria. It just isn't going to happen. We have to get out, get to whether it's South Australia, New South Wales, Western Australia, Even still have to contemplate Queensland games. It'll be interesting to see how they handle that, because they've obviously already had the hub in Queensland. But again, it's one of the safe zones at the moment. So I think Brisbane and Gold Coast are going to have to travel a little bit in foreseeable future, but I certainly wouldn't rule out another Queensland hub at some stage to get this season going. It's going to be fascinating because at the moment, South Australia has excluded Victorians from direct entry when their borders open on July 20. But the solution that's being discussed at the moment is if they go across to WA, they can play and train during their quarantine period entering WA. So if they do that and they serve that quarantine period in WA, the South Australian government seems to be open to the fact that on the way home, they can play in South Australia after coming out of WA. So I think we're going to see a bit of that, starting WA, moving into South Australia. That's certainly going to be a possibility throughout the year, and obviously Sydney is going to be a hub as well. So there's a bit to play out. Ultimately, it's not a big deal not to have footy in Victoria. Out for fans, I guess, from a playing perspective, it's going to be obviously pretty difficult being away from families and loved ones. I think that's certainly going to be tough. But when you talk about games not being played in Victoria, it's not really a big deal from a spectator side of things, because no one's going in to watch anyway. We're all watching on TV. Well, most of us are watching TV. I've been lucky enough as a media, as somebody who works in the media, to be able to go and watch from the press box under sort of strict protocols. But, as far as not having games in Victoria, the fans aren't going to lose out, really, because at this stage, with the rising numbers in Victoria, there's no chance we're going to be going to the footy anytime soon anyway.
Big year in football, big week in football, big day in football, Mark. Thanks so much for your time once again, and look forward to chatting again soon.
No problem, Scott.